Welcome to the Mental Health Janitors, where we help you clean up the mess in your head. I'm your host, Sergeant Q, and with me, as always, Doc Jess.
Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
We have a great episode for you guys today. We're going to talk about the chaos in the world and how that is affecting your mental health journey. So this is part two of a four-part series we're doing specifically on the stress of the world we live in and the impact on our mental health. Then we're going to talk about our new advancements, which is a free mental health webinar that you guys are going to want to check out. Then we're going to get into our scripture. And then Jess, our tool for our toolbox is a little different today. What is it?
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of piggyback off of last week, our last episode, where we got to hear some of Aaron's narration of his PTSD journey of growth. So we call that post-traumatic growth, and how cognitive processing therapy, which is a theory in counseling that can help process that PTSD.
All right. Well, save some for the rest of the show, Jess. This is just the intro.
Don't make me smile.
So Jess, if she sounds a little funny, that's just her. It's okay.
No,
I'm just kidding. No, she was at the dentist today, so she's a little slack jawed. She might drool a little bit. It's totally fine.
Okay. I got you.
All right. Well, actually, yes, let's do the cards.
All right. So here we go with our card word teasers.
Yes. So Jess got these for me for Christmas this year because I just have all these random facts. So she thought it was funny. And so she bought these and brought it in. And the first three right off the bat, I nailed it. So we thought, this would be funny to not just do in our pre-show, but to bring it to you guys live.
Yeah. So it's been pretty fun. All right. So my question today is, what do your ears, lips, and nails have in common?
Approximately 10 hours later.
Oh, you don't have any sweat glands in those. Yeah.
There you go.
You don't have any sweat glands. Well, I guess you do have sweat glands in your nose. That's true.
In your nose, but this is
You don't have
ears, lips, and nails.
Okay.
They are the only part of your body without sweat glands. Humans have up to 4 million sweat glands, but for those parts, you can confidently say no sweat. Let's jump right into our current event, Sergeant Q.
Yes. So our current event, we really just want to talk about the state of the world that we're living in. So there's always been danger and chaos and terrorism and war. It's always been in our society from the beginning of time. The difference is that we are inundated with information about all of these things all day, every day, because number one, of the 24-hour news cycle with CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, 24-hour news cycle of nothing but pumping you full of all of this doom and gloom that's happening in the world. And number two, social media. Social media is another huge component of inundating us with this information. Mm-hmm. That is causing us to live in a perpetual state of fear. And when you feel fear, two chemicals are released, cortisol and adrenaline, which are great if there's an actual event happening right now. Like if a bear or a mountain lion came in the studio right now, we're going to get hit with a bunch of adrenaline and cortisol so we can fight or run. But as soon as that threat leaves, then our body turns that cortisol and adrenaline off because we don't need it anymore. The difference is when it's just a perceived threat, the brain doesn't know that it's not a real active threat. Mm-hmm. So it keeps that adrenaline and cortisol like cranked up all the time because it thinks there's a real threat there. It never goes away because you're constantly looking at that 24-hour news cycle. You're constantly looking at your social media feed. There's a bunch of people who are all up in arms and worried about the eclipse that's happening right now, mm-hmm. that's happening today, like right now as we're filming, it's happening. And people are all worried about this. Is this going to be the end of the world and all of these things? And it causes people to live in a perpetual state of fear. And this was none more evident than during COVID, mm-hmm. where at any time, the eggs that you got from the grocery store could kill you and grandma because they could have COVID on it. So that really launched us into this fear-based world that we're living in right now. And it's having a tremendous negative impact on all of our mental health.
And what's interesting about that, Aaron, is I was just doing some research on the how you talk about the perceived threat. Mm-hmm. It's real in our bodies and we process it as it's real, just like perceived successes. And so I'm not a big fan of speak it into existence type things. However, there has been research and studies to show productive and positive outcomes of those who fix their thoughts on where they are going and the positive things. And what was it that he said specifically? I'll have to maybe on break think about it, but it was a really interesting video. It was part of my rotation because I started doing the motivational video.
Yeah, those YouTubes are great.
In the morning. And I'll tell you what, it has made an impact on my life. For sure.
Absolutely.
And so I did ask you a few months ago to put together like your favorite.
Oh, yes. I didn't do that. I should have.
Casey,
done that.
He didn't do it.
I didn't do that. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I should have.
It's great though. Yeah. If you can see it, you can be it.
So I'm going to start downloading the ones that I find most valuable and then sharing those.
Oh, yeah. We should do that.
We could do that.
There are so many that are out there. There's a ton. And you'll find some of them are good. Some of them are not real good.
Yeah.
But it's great to start your day with that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love doing that. I'm not a huge David Goggins fan, but his videos find their way in to like the menagerie of the ones that I listen to from time to time. So I've gotten more used to Goggins. I'm still not a huge fan of what his presentation, but he does find his way in there from time to time. So I'm getting more used to him.
I saw a mom come to one of his lives and she wanted to read to him and show him some pictures of her son who was suicidal. Like the son says he saved his life because of his motivations. And this kid lost over 100 pounds, and it was kind of cool to watch that. And
it was so funny. Just as you're saying that. So when I do my ice plunge, like that's when I listen to Goggins because I need that level of motivation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the cold plunge sucks so bad.
That's interesting that you listen to him. I listen to the same guy who just walks me through my breath work.
No, I need him.
Okay, I gotta listen to Goggins.
So Casey, you're going to have to like beep this out. He goes, what I needed when I was tired and fat is I just needed somebody to tell me to just suck it up and move forward through that. And he's just like every other word's an F bomb or an S bomb. And so but in that moment, because that's about the 2/3 of the way through, minute and a half where I'm in there and it's just my whole body is now starting to shut down.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when Goggins comes in. And I need that in that moment because, man, it sucks so bad. It'd be so easy to just get out.
So you have the breath work down?
I have the breath work down.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've been doing this for over a year. I've been doing this for like 14 months right now.
Yeah. So I just need, because I still need somebody to guide me through that because I get in.
Oh, yeah. No, I've gotten the breath work down. I've gotten the breath work down. And now, but I listen to that and that's about that 2/3 of the way through where Goggins.
All right. You got to send me that.
And I'll send it to you. And it's just that one little piece that he says. It's just one little clip of a much larger thing that he's talking about, but that's what I need. He goes, I needed to get inside of my own head and fix it.
He reminds me a little bit of that other guy who's like really rough and straightforward. Was he a fighter? You know what I'm talking about? Alex, you sent us a video of him saying,
I send you lots of videos.
Counseling is stupid and that's what's wrong with.
Oh, I don't like that guy.
You don't?
I do not like that guy.
I don't necessarily like
I'm not even going to mention his name, but I don't like that
I like
guy
him
at all.
I like him.
No,
I like, no, no, I like no, no, some, no, no. I like a lot of the stuff he says. I don't love all of it. I didn't love all of that video, but he had some good points in it. I do have to say.
Yes, but the delivery was terrible.
It was
that,
terrible.
That falls right in telling people, you don't need therapy. And anybody who tells you you do is wrong.
This is like our banter.
That is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he delivered that was awful. And I think that does more harm than good to the mental health discussion.
Sure.
And so for me, I can't sign off on anything he does when that's the kind of stuff that he puts out.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So for me, it's a non-starter.
Yeah. So this mental health crisis, right, that we're inundated with most human beings right now. I mean, I look around at just some of the clients that come in and some of the things that enable them disable them from doing daily tasks. Mm-hmm. It's insane because how do I say that this in a professional way? A lot of it is a privilege problem.
Yes. And if you live in America, you are very privileged. I'll just tell you, I've been all over the world, and the stuff that people deal with outside of our borders, it is far worse than what we deal with here. We have social systems set up. We have food systems set up. We have support networks in place. So we have the same problems here as they do there. There's just no social support or governmental support to be able to help people when they're struggling with those things.
And I'm thinking back because I just taught my free parenting class this last weekend. And one of my examples is when my youngest daughter went through a stage. She's got ADHD and some sensory stuff going on. And at the risk of stepping on feelings, she went through a stage where certain shoes or socks didn't feel right to her, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't painful. It just didn't feel right. And it would have been so easy for me to get her a different pair of shoes that morning or a different pair of socks. But I needed her to work through being uncomfortable and see if she could work past that and still wear these shoes that I bought for her and not waste money, okay? Mm-hmm. So I did that for a season. I would say, okay, we're going to wear them around the house for 30 minutes and then I'll check on you in 30 minutes. And she'd have to do it. A, I know it's not painful. I check the shoes, make sure there's no like needles or anything, but it's more of a sensory thing. And after 30 minutes, she was like, oh, they're fine now, right? And I can't tell you how many clients I've had who have from maybe just not knowing. You don't know what you don't know and you don't know the tools, but they, as soon as their kid is uncomfortable, their instinct is like, oh, okay, let's take you to the doctor. And then the doctor's like, oh, they have sensory and get slapped on this diagnosis thing. And then they get to order there's 1% of people out there that might have such a major sensory disorder that it makes them not function. But I would say at least 95% of those people, it just felt uncomfortable and they had to work through it. Right. And it's so easy to go and get a label diagnosed on your kid to make your life easier. But to me, that is a privilege problem because there are no sensory disorders in Africa.
Right.
None.
You're right. They have basic needs they're trying to meet.
Yeah.
Which is food and water and shelter. And so when those needs are met here in America, then it's a lot easier for us to look at these other privileged problems that we deal with, which is, you know, our clothes don't fit right, or we need a different type of material or things like that.
Yeah. And I don't want to, I feel like I've gotten a little off topic because of what we're talking about. Well, no, it's relevant to this mental health crisis is the more comfortable we get and the less we have to step out of our comfort zone, the less we're able to be resilient towards things. And then our mental resiliency goes down and mental health crisis creeps in and we can't handle life.
Because we haven't had to handle small little issues growing up. And so then when a normal adult issue comes in, we're just completely overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Because we've never had to problem solve or sit in discomfort or have to struggle through a problem because a parent or guardian just eliminated the problem for us. Yeah. Remove those barriers when really those barriers are what make us stronger and more resilient.
Yeah. And a little side note to single moms. I was a single mom for 3 years. So I feel you. It's hard. It's a tough job. And a lot of you are not single moms by your choice. Okay. Put that aside. The most damage I see in a lot of young men that are raised from single moms is the mom. I have multiple clients who are starting to it's starting to be revealed to them that their inability to be masculine men, do hard things, work hard, have good work ethic, stick to commitments is because their single mom, like subconsciously and consciously, goes in and wants to protect them from their father not being there. And so when they're not feeling like going to school, they're, okay, baby, you can stay home. When they're called to do something hard at school, oh, you don't have to do it. I'll get you out of it. And single moms' hearts are there to protect and nurture, but it's very, very damaging to young boys. So that's my little.
So to conclude what we're talking about here with the mental health crisis, living in a constant survival state, which is what we're doing because we're constantly bombarded with the news and with social media about all these negative things. When we're constantly living in a survival state, it takes a toll on our mental and emotional well-being. The brain is bombarded by these stressors, and so then it releases cortisol and adrenaline, which disrupts our cognitive functioning. It leaves us emotionally unregulated, and we feel drained and overwhelmed. But there is a way that you can break free from this cycle. Yeah. And we're going to get into that in our next section.
50% of Americans say that they or a loved one have suffered from mental health crisis. Together, we can change all that. Introducing QActual, a revolutionary new peer-to-peer-based mobile application. Personalized to fit your lifestyle. With pinpoint GPS location in times of emergency. Connecting you to your care provider. With QActual, we will move you forward. Download QActual now and visit QActual.com.
Well, Aaron, I'm really excited to jump into this next section of our podcast, and that's our new advancement. And what's really cool about today is we're going to be able to get a little snapshot of what this new advancement is going to be and how it can help you grow in your mental resiliency.
Yeah, so this is something I've been working on for the last 8 years and putting in the public space, but really I've been building this for the last 15 years just for myself. I've been building this tool just for me so I could overcome trauma. And I talked about that a little bit last week, where going from hopeless and homeless and suicidal to being a super successful entrepreneur, owning multiple businesses, winning multiple reality TV show competitions, it's because I learned to take control of my mental health journey. So 15 years ago, I started doing this. I started reading scripture and reading these medical journals. And that's how I know so much about this space, because I've been studying this every day for the last 15 years, building a little program for myself.
Studying and struggling.
And struggling through it. And I've learned a lot about the brain, how it operates, why it does the things that it does, and then how to overcome it when it's malfunctioning, how to be able to, you know, tap, rack, bang, and get back in the fight. And so I've taken all of this, and 8 years ago, I started leading veterans to be able to improve their mental health journey, to build better resilience and understand the brain-body connection. And Jess, you went through my program in its early stages. I think year two, you went through my program, when it was very early on. And over the last 8 years, I've led dozens of teams through this, received multiple awards from the Department of Veterans Affairs for this work in the veteran mental health space. Well, I've taken everything that I've learned from the battlefield and applied it to a new battlefield, the battlefield of the mind. And now we've taken it a step further. And I've worked with a professor out of Colorado who has helped me redesign this for civilians. And so we took the entire program, all 12 concepts, and we've built it out for civilians. So it's the same stuff, but the terminology is a little bit different, because we can use acronyms all day. We know what we're talking about, but the average person has no idea. So he's helped me redefine those things and make it more applicable to the general public. And I put out a free mental health webinar every single month. So every single month, there's a new, it's freementalhealthwebinar.com. So Casey, you'll put that up for us. Just leave it on the screen, Casey. Leave it up for the whole rest of the segment. But free mental health webinar, you can go there, sign up. I do this every single month. Come and check it out. Invite your friends. It's totally free. You're going to learn some really cool things. What we're going to first talk about is you're going to hear a little bit about my story. And then you'll hear about this idea of the three mental health camps, where you live in the victim mentality, the denier camp, or the silent majority. And I know all of these camps. I've lived in every one of them. And by working with veterans over the last 8 years, I found that the majority of us have lived in each one of these camps as well. So we'll talk about that, and then how I found what I call Camp Hope, being able to move forward out of that negative mental health cycle. Then we talk about the brain-body connection. How does the brain work? What is the difference between the conscious and subconscious? Teach you guys a little bit of the basics of how that operates. We talk a little bit about negative bias, how to overcome that. And then we really dive into next steps. Like, what can you do now that you're armed with this information? How can you take this and apply it to your own life and then help your friends and family do the same? And so that's a free mental health webinar that I put on every single month. If you guys are interested, check out the link. You can sign up and bring your friends.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. You're not going to regret the hour and a half that you spend learning some really good stuff. And one thing that I love that you do with it is it's education, but it's also activation, right? Yes. And you help us walk through what we can do to take ownership of our own mental health growth.
That's right. So a lot of times, you know, friends or family of somebody who's struggling with mental health, they come to me and they say, oh, I have this friend or family member who's struggling with mental health. Can you help them? And my answer to them is always, no, I really can't. But you can. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have any value in that individual's life. There's no reason why they would listen to me unless they've heard something I said, I've inspired them. But if you're just going to send me one of your friends or family members that for me to help them, I don't have any buy-in into their life. I have no value proposition for them. Mm. But if you are a friend or family member, you do.
Yeah.
You already have social credit with this person. So even if you're not struggling with mental health, come learn these techniques so that way you can start to have these critical conversations with your friends and family about mental health.
That's a great point.
I tell people all the time, the best way to break down those barriers around the stigma of mental health is to share your own mental health journey.
Yeah. Transparency is always the greatest motivator in growth. I mean, that's why in counseling, when you're in school to learn to be a counselor, one of the most foundational things is to help validate and normalize what people are feeling and going through, because so much we feel isolated in what we're going through when millions of other people have felt it, gone through it, overcome it.
Yep. I know how you feel. I felt the same way. These are the things that I've done that helped. Mm-hmm. It breaks down that isolation piece. And that is the worst part. And in my book, I talk about this. I talk about it in the lens of an ambush. So in an ambush in the military, if a squad is on patrol and they get ambushed, the enemy surprises them with an attack. And their goal is to separate the squad, to separate you from the rest of your support so they can maneuver, overwhelm you with fire, and kill you. That's the goal of an ambush. Well, when we struggle with mental health, it uses that exact same tactic. We'll feel depressed, or we'll feel anxious, or we'll have an anxiety attack, or we'll have a panic attack in public, and we'll be really embarrassed about whatever it is that we're dealing with. And so we isolate away from people. Mm-hmm. We don't want to have that happen again. So we stay away from friends and family. We isolate away. We don't share that because we're embarrassed. We feel shameful about it. And we're like, oh, we'll just fix it on our own. But that's how these small little things become a mental health crisis. And if a mental health crisis unresolved leads to suicidal ideations. And that's the progression, and that's what can happen. So if you have struggled with mental health, the best thing you can do is to be open and honest with people around you, because they can lend you support or get you to the professionals that can.
Yeah, exactly. And my mind is going to like the end section of all these like things I want to share, because today I'm going to be talking a little bit about my post-traumatic growth and I'm just little nuggets here that I'll make sure that I bring up at the end.
So Jess, you had some scripture that you wanted to share with us today.
Yeah.
So what are those?
We're going to find our scripture today in Psalm 91, 4 through 16. And it is a bigger chunk, but it's, oh my gosh, it's so good. So I'm going to be reading out of the New Living Translation. But the New King James Version and the ESV are really good for this scripture as well. It says, He, capital H, God, will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. His faithful promises are your armor and protection. Do not be afraid of the terrors of the night, nor the arrow that flies in the day. Do not dread the disease that stalks in darkness, nor the disaster that strikes at midday. Though 1,000 fall at your side, though 10,000 are dying around you, these evils will not touch you. Just open your eyes and see how the wicked are punished. If you make the Lord your refuge, if you make the Most High your shelter, no evil will conquer you. No plague will come near your home, for he will order his angels to protect you wherever you go. They will hold you up in their hands so you won't even hurt your foot on a stone. You will trample upon lions and cobras. You will crush fierce lions and serpents under your feet. The Lord says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. When they call on me, I will answer. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue and honor them. I will reward them with a long life and give them my salvation. I love this piece of scripture because it talks some, you know, what we call trigger words of, you know, do not dread the disease that stalks in the darkness mm-hmm. or the disaster that strikes midday. I mean, talk about just coming out of COVID.
Right. Coming out of COVID and then disaster strikes at midday. 11 o'clock is the eclipse that everybody was worried about.
Yeah. And, yeah. It's just
components,
and,
right?
And these are promises from the Lord that we don't have to worry about that. Those for those who love him. Right. And that's, it says, I will rescue those who love me. I will protect those who trust in my name. And so if anybody is watching and they want to know more about that, we're always open to talk about what that looks like to love the Lord and to trust in his name. But
yeah, you can leave us, if you have questions, you can leave those in the comments. We do look at those and we do answer them. Sometimes we answer them on camera. So in a future episode, we may select one of those questions to answer, but we always answer back to those questions. Or if you guys need to get connected to a local church, or if you have questions about, you know, what does this journey look like? We'd love to be able to help you guys get connected to a good Bible believing church in your area.
Yeah.
And oh, free plug for Faith and Victory Church. If you're in the South King County area, Faith and Victory Church in Auburn is a great church. Wednesdays and Sundays, we have service and we have a bunch of other events throughout the week.
Yeah. Great.
All right, Jess, let's get into our next component, which is normally our tool for our toolbox. But today we're going to talk about your journey with mental health.
And today I am the tool.
You are the tool. You are post-traumatic growth.
I am post-traumatic growth.
And
that's
so
right.
What are we labeling this section? We pined over this. We had a very long sentence and we've condensed it.
Well, yours was so cool. What, homeless and hopeless to multimillionaire? I don't know, something really cool. And I'm like, 23 jobs in 23 years? I don't know. I did have 23 jobs in 23 years. But I think we're going to go with stability. No. Chaos to stability, a mental health growth journey.
From chaos to stability, a mental health journey.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and I kind of want to piggyback on the cognitive processing therapy that we talked about last week. And we talked about the narration stage. And in my post-traumatic growth, cognitive processing therapy was a huge part to play. Also, if I'm going to jump back to what we were talking about earlier in the episode and that group setting and that mentality of not feeling isolated. So I was officially diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder in 2007 after getting out of the Army. I was finishing my probation period as a flight attendant. And I loved the job. I was living in Washington, D.C. and flying for a large airline. And I was just a couple weeks from getting off probation. And so probation is 6 months where they can fire you for almost anything legally. So as a new flight attendant, you start on what's called reserve. And reserve is really fun for me because it like got that adrenaline junkie out of me. Cause what happens is you're on your 30 day schedule looks like on 4 days, off 3 days, on 3 days, off 2 days, on 5 days, off 4 days. And so in your chunk of on, you have to sleep with your phone next to your ear because they can call you at 4 o'clock in the morning and be like, okay, you ready for your trip? Because we get all the trips that older flight attendants call out on because they get to bid on things. So one 4 day trip could be a flight to Hawaii, a 2 day layover and a flight back. amazing trip, right? A flight could be to Narita, Japan. It could be to Beijing. It could be to Buenos Aires, like so many cool places. Or it could be a flight to Sioux Falls, South Dakota for a 9-hour layover and then like just go for 4 days straight. So you get a lot of variety, right? And so I get my call and they're like, you're going to Kuwait. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't been back that way in a while. Let's see how this goes, right? So I'm ready to go. I'm in my suit, my flight attendant attire, and I'm getting ready to board the airplane. And there was a lot of Kuwaiti people. Is that the right way to say it?
Middle Eastern.
Okay. Can we edit that out?
No, yeah, Middle Eastern's fine.
Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a lot of Middle Eastern passengers getting ready to board. Of course, they're going home. And I experienced my very first panic attack ever in my entire life. I was throwing up. I had a fever. I actually got a fever. And I had a major panic attack. I froze. I couldn't take a step onto the airplane. And, oh, man, you were talking about how embarrassing those situations are where you feel so isolated. Like, oh my gosh, everybody around me was like, what is wrong with this chick? And so I had to run, right? And so then they had to get another flight attendant who had the right amount of hours and things like that to be able to cover me at the last minute, which is detrimental for the airline. So I understand, like, in a situation like that, without understanding the whole story, why they would fire me for that. And they did. They let me go a few weeks before my probation period because they had to spend a lot of money and do a lot of work to cover my. And now that we know so much more about PTSD, I could have fought it back then and won easily. But we just didn't know much about PTSD, and I wasn't diagnosed with it yet. It was my very first like panic attack. I had the December before that, I had a panic attack on New Year's Eve. We had gone to downtown Denver for New Year's Eve and the fireworks went off. And this is the first time I experienced fireworks after coming home from Iraq. And I had a major, I call it PTSD attack in the club. We were at a club in the club. I had to go home. It was really bad. And I was like, what just happened to me? Like, this is crazy. And then, so this was, you know, fast forward, I don't know, 6-8 months is when this one happened. And it was a wide awakening for me. I ended up going to the hospital and at the VA in Washington, D.C., and they ended up involuntarily holding me for 72 hours. And that was the worst thing they could have done for me, too, because I was so isolated there. It was 48 other people on the psych ward and they were all homeless veterans. And it was a really hard couple weeks for me, and just going through, like, I lost my dream job. I've never been fired from a job up until this point, and I loved this job. So I really spiraled after that. I had gotten married 2 weeks after we got back from Iraq, and my marriage was horrible, in shambles, very destructive. And I'm now getting all of these experiences with post-traumatic stress disorder, not to mention doing some, So I spiraled really bad. This is when I started self-medicating a lot with drinking. And so after that experience in 2007, being involuntarily held in a psych ward, I said, I'm never going back to the VA. And a lot of veterans feel the same way. But then a year or two went by. So because I had that experience at the VA, they made me an appointment with outsourced me. And that's when they diagnosed me or like the VA and stuff. Okay, you have PTSD. So fast forward a year or two and I would hit rock bottom again and try to go get help from the VA. And it would be another horrible experience. It would be a social worker intern who had no idea what they were doing. And it was like reading off a clipboard and asking me questions like, A, it's the most like vulnerable place to be. And then you have somebody that you're not that's not building a therapeutic relationship with you, and you feel like a number and they're like checking off a clipboard. It was just really uncomfortable. And so every time I went, I felt like I got worse. And then in my head, I would spin out of control and be like, I am crazy. I'm never going to get better. And so I would then go a year or two and self-medicate. And I was to a point where I was having suicide ideations every single day. And then 2009, I had a baby. I went through a horrific divorce. And then that just, all those things just kept piling and piling. And I was a hot mess. And so, I mean, I did a thorough inventory of all the jobs that I've had since my first job at 16 years old. And I literally had 23 jobs in 23 years. And a lot of those were, I would work somewhere for 4 to 6 months, jump, work somewhere for 4 to 6 months, jump, work somewhere for maybe a year, jump. Because I was really stable before the Army. I worked at a local Italian restaurant here from 16 to 18 until I moved out of the house to California to be a counselor and then to not counselor. Oh yeah, counselor, camp counselor for kids, you know. And it was after the military that I became really unstable. And I was just always looking for that new thing, that adrenaline rush. I would get comfortable. And when I wasn't learning something new, these thoughts and these flashbacks would come in. And I'd be like, I got to get out of here. And I ran. I ran from life. I ran from everything. And I self-medicated with alcohol a lot. So let's fast forward to 2016. I had gone to the VA a couple times to try to get help. And every time it was that same thing I said. So finally, I meet Sergeant Q and his wife. And they had just done their very first Operation Restore Hope in November of 2015. And they were like, okay, we're ready to launch with a bigger group. And so I was like their second Operation Restore Hope with a big group of putting this thing to the test. And I was so nervous. And I just remember Aaron's wife just every day gearing up. She was like, I got you. We got you. Nothing's going to happen. We got you. And I don't doubt for a second. They would have taken a bullet for me mentally, physically, situationally, like whatever, like they had my back 100%. I felt like singled out and I got extra special treatment because they were like, we got to get this girl help. So, we went on Memorial Day weekend, 2016. And it was the Memorial Day weekend is so hard for me because I lost 99 people that I knew. I watched them die on the table. I've seen over 100 dead bodies of soldiers and, enemy. And all I would see for Memorial Day is people like partying. Hey, where are you going? And ignorantly, they're not trying to hurt veterans. But oh my gosh, it's so hard to watch that stuff. I get so angry. So I have to stay off of social media and public places. And I just got wasted every year for Memorial Day weekend. The whole weekend, I was drunk. And so 2016 Memorial Day was the very first weekend since 2007 in 9 years that I wasn't drunk on Memorial Day weekend because I was at Operation Restore Hope building a home for a homeless family with a whole bunch of other veteran friends that had like-minded and similar experiences that we shared with each other. I felt a part of a purpose, an army again, the whole way he had it set up with squad leaders and support. And it was incredible. And it was challenging, really, really challenging at the same time. And maybe we can talk about that some other day, but, that what I realized when we were standing in our circle, handing the key around, cause that's what we do before we give the key to the family. We say what was so touching for us. And for me, it was that this is the first Memorial Day that I wasn't drunk. And I haven't been drunk one day since that day. And it was really the pivotal moment in my life that I really started taking responsibility for my own mental health resiliency and my own mental health growth. And I learned that from this guy. And even though he was still in the rut of his, like, he was not the guy he is now either. Right. And so we learned and we grew together, and his wife, man, we got to get her on here because she has an incredible mental health growth story of her own. She is an incredible human being. Anyways, so I started getting growth from that because my husband also got to come, and he also got to see that a lot of veterans are the same. And he was like, able to talk to other spouses like, oh, your vet does that. Oh, your mine does too. And they found some really cool growth within themselves by knowing they weren't isolated either, that they weren't the only ones married to a crazy vet, right? We're all crazy vets, and they can find solace in each other as well. And so it was, my husband will say that's the first, that like the door opening of him seeing how bad I was mentally and how he could be a better support to me after that weekend. And it's been a long journey since then, but it was really the pivotal moment in my life. So then fast forward a couple months, I was able to go to a 3-month intense outpatient program in Chicago, which then just compounded. And we've talked about this in another episode because I got to send it to them.
The Road Home program.
The Road Home program, yeah. And so that was another thing, kind of. So 3 weeks versus 4 days, right? So I got to be taken out of my environment and really focus on my growth for those 3 days. And that's when we, when they brought me through cognitive processing therapy, and why I'm such an advocate for veterans for cognitive processing therapy, because it changed my life. So I had already built some tools and got some hope from Operation Restore Hope. And then it just kept compounding because then I started my trajectory of growth instead of despair. Right. And so since then, I mean, I then graduated with my undergrad degree, my bachelor's degree in 2017, and then got a stint of being able to be a teacher, which is one of my dream jobs as a kid. I was an in-school suspension teacher, which showed me, oh, I really want to help kids, which then launched me into graduate school. And I graduated with my master's in counseling in 2021. And so I went from total and utter chaos, 23 jobs in 23 years, to now like a stable job, stable mental health, and to where I'm now like on a podcast teaching mental health growth with a multimillionaire.
It's really cool, Jess, to hear your story. I mean, yeah. I've heard it. I watch you live it out, but it's still really cool to hear you go through it.
Yeah.
The thing that I think that really stood out to me was as you were telling the story, and I know the viewers noticed it. I noticed it too. You maybe didn't, but the whole confidence of who you are in that moment changed as soon as you started talking about taking control of your mental health journey. Mm. Your tone, your voice inflection, your body language, everything changed in you.
Interesting.
As you started to tell that part of the story.
That's really cool.
It was really cool to watch. Yeah, and I'm watching it live, and so I'm sure the people on video saw it as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for me to go back. Because usually I'm the counselor, and so I'm watching that in other people, and I'm able to pull that out and say, hey, you know, I noticed this. Why do you think that is? And then, like, I'm thinking of counseling myself right now. I'm like, because, like, literally hope.
Yes.
Hope. And Operation Restore Hope. That's, like, literally what it does. Anyways, free plug.
So, yeah, that's what I started doing with veterans. And I'm trying to put something together now for civilians to do that same type of trip. The problem is I've got to get, like, 60 people together who want to take control of their mental health journey, who want to be part of that program, who are going to give up 4 days and thousands of dollars to go and do this trip to take control of their mental health journey. So I'm not quite there yet on putting that together, but we still have the free webinars that we put together. I still have classes, ongoing classes. And if you are interested in taking that leap of faith and doing the whole trip, because we've designed it now for civilians, let us know in the comments, and I'll put you guys into a nurture campaign where I'll just keep in contact with you. So when we get that trip up and running, we'll be able to plug you guys.
And right, he's going to need a licensed mental health counselor on those trips.
I don't know where I can find one, but I need a doctor.
Dang.
No. So that was a really cool
thing. I need 100K.
So what Jess was talking about.
Followers. Sorry.
Is that so her journey with education and becoming a mental health counselor. And we call her Doc Jess because she was a medic in the military. And so we just call all the medics Doc. That's just what we do. But she's going to go from Doc Jess to Dr. Bergens probably in the next, I'd say 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, right.
So stay tuned for that. It's going to be really exciting.
I'm going to need to go to another operation and restore hope for that. No.
So as always, you guys, we love to educate, empower, and encourage you on your mental health journey. Jump into this free webinar. We'd love to be able to take you guys on the next step for your mental health journey.
Please make sure to like and subscribe our videos.
Yes. And for that, I am Sergeant Q.
I'm Doc Jess.
And we're out.
Oh, together this time.
And it was on point.